Welcome, everybody. It's a great pleasure to have you all here. And we are starting a journey together that will take, I'm sure, quite a long time. We're going to attempt to go from beginning to end in Megillat Esther. And it's going to take a while because we're going to be doing a great deal of hashkafah and textual analysis, and we'll have our usual questions from everyone.
So
I'm expecting that it's going to really be lively and exciting. So we're going to obviously shoot to get as much done as we can within reason before Purim, but we're going to continue after that because we'll just be lit fox. And it doesn't matter what time of the year it is, we're still going to study Megillat Esther. Okay? So, I have the following plan for tonight, which usually means we don't get to everything. First, I want to talk about Pirsumei Nisa. Then I want to talk about Hester Pamim. And then, following that, I want to look deeply at the significance, the overarching significance of what I call the eternality of Megillat Esther. And then we're actually going to try to do at least two words of the Megillah itself. Those are the goals, right? Okay, maybe even Achashverosh, but we'll see. First of all, let's begin with the concept of Pirsumei Nisa. So does anybody want to suggest what Pirsumei Nisa means? What is it?
To publicize it? To publicize it?
Publicize what?
The nace. Yeah.
The nace. Okay, and in the case of Purim, publicizing the nace, we're still here to talk about it. Right? So, Purim is one of the two instances in the course of the year where there's Pirsumei Nisa. What's the second and rather obvious one?
Hanukkah.
And last but not least, what's the third? This is the one that most people don't get.
Pesach,
but not all of Pesach. Specifically, the Arba Kosot. The Arba Kosot, another example of Pirsumei Nisa. Yeah, we're going to talk about all of that in a minute. Okay? Now, one thing that all these acts of Pirsumei Nisa have in common is that they are all, and don't think I'm pandering here to feminists or anything along those lines, but these are all essentially and quintessentially female-oriented mitzvot. Let's talk about why. Megillat Esther is obvious. The name itself tells you. Without Esther, there wouldn't have been the salvation that we experienced. She had the wisdom, she had the insight that in some ways Mordechai did not share. Mordechai, in a sense, gave her the meta vision, and Esther was responsible for the implementation. Okay, and only she really knew how to do that. So that's the first one. Second one, the idea of Hanukkah. Although there's no legitimate Jewish source that's widely recognized by everyone, there is the Megillat Antiochus that was first done in Greek, then translated into Aramaic, then translated into Hebrew. But as you know, it's not part of the canon of Scripture, what you and I call normally Tanakh. Okay? But nonetheless, who is the heroine of Megillat Antiochus and of Hanukkah that Chazal do speak about? Yehudit. Okay, not just the Maccabim, but Yehudit, second female. And the last one, that's the clincher. Okay, what do we always say when it comes to Pesach? Mishum Nashim Tzidkaniyot Nigalu Avatenu Mimitzrayim. Now, it's interesting. If you look in the Gemara in Pesachim Taf Kuf Chet, Amin Aleph and Amin Bet, okay, these three mitzvot, okay, that are all incidentally Derabbanan, are mitzvot where women are completely, totally, equally obligated as men, even though they are time-conditioned. They are mitzvot derabanan, shazman grama, right? Obviously, Chanukah only happens at the period, Pesach and Purim, they're all based upon time. Normally, women would be excluded from Italian-bound commandment, derabanan or daraita. But Chazal really say, why are women obligated in all three of these instances? Right? Why? So they were involved in the miracle. Whereas I'm really willing, because I believe it's intellectually honest, to not just to say that they were involved in the miracle, I'm willing to go so far as that in some ways the miracle never would have transpired without the involvement of the women. So this idea, Afen Ayuba, you know, Boto Anes, really needs to be strengthened, that women are the responsible parties. Now, that's idea one. Idea two.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. I understand that the oldest man grammar, especially with Purim and the four kosos. But with Chanukah, you have like the whole night to do it. So it's not really Zman Grama.
But it starts on Chaf Hei of Kislev and continues.
Oh, you mean that way. I see it as.
Right?
So when I hear Zman Grama, I think of the time of day. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. I mean, because if you think about it, every Yontif comes at the time it comes.
Correct.
So
it's going to really.
The Chaf Hei, just because it's Chaf Hei Kislev.
Correct.
But Pesach is always the same thing after Nisan and the same in Shavuot and so on.
Correct.
That's why I see it as time versus of the day.
But it means that, in a sense, if we use a modern word like trigger, can we use the word trigger? You know, like he did X, she did Y because certain triggers, you know, a psychological terminology, right? So if we just borrow that, we look at it within a Torah context, the time does trigger certain kinds of behaviors to take place. In other words, no matter how much I love Rosh Hashanah, I really can't decide in the middle of June that, you know what, guys? We really need to have Rosh Hashanah early this year. There's so much going on. It's not going to help. So it's time-bound. Okay, if I sound the shofar a day before Rosh Hashanah and a day after Rosh Hashanah, I have no mitzvah whatsoever. So it's the same thing really in all three of these cases. You drink the Arba Kosot on Shavuot, it's very nice, but you haven't done anything. You haven't even drunk the Arba Kosot. Go ahead.
Women are obligating the four Kosos?
Yes.
Because I never make it. It just doesn't happen.
All right. But
now you know
as significant and as important as you are, even if you don't make it through, your obligation is still there.
We tried.
And you do the best you can, and so forth. Okay, and if you can't get it through, I mean, at least try the second night.
It's not because I'm tired. It's just the alcohol and me don't go together.
Well, you don't have to drink only wine. You could drink grape juice. Okay, and halakhically fulfill your obligation.
I do.
Okay, so that's the first idea. Now, second idea is it's Persume Nisa, but when we talk about Persume Nisa, where are these miracles actually taking place? So when we think about Chanukah is the most public of all these acts of Persume Nisa. Everybody knows when it's Chanukah, okay? And because many, many times, but not always, even long before there was Lubavitch, people would still have their Chanukiah, or what we generally call as Ashkenazim, the menorah, visible. Okay? And many of you have been to Israel, for example, during Chanukah. You see everybody puts it outside in the wall with glass and all of that.
You
so,
can make them here now, too. You can buy them in the Hebrew bookstore.
Okay, that's very good. So it's very, very public. The second down of public would be Purim, because I guarantee you, even when people see us running around in unusual costumes and so forth, they really don't understand what's going on, and they have a little bit of trouble if you were to explain to them, well, this is a public recognition of the miracle that took place. So I hate to quote him. I have no choice. It's Bill Cosby, as he said long ago. Right. You really expect me to believe that. Okay? But that's the second time. Now, the one that is the least public of all is the Arba Kosot. And that's specifically for the people that are ensconced at the reading of the Haggadah and at the Seder itself. But nonetheless, they're all for Sumei Nisa. Okay? So the takeaway is all these wonderful mitzvot Rabbanan, okay, are very, very woman-oriented. Without women, they would not have taken place. And then we get into the concept itself of Pursumei Nisa. So what are we trying to do with Pursumei Nisa? Yes, we're trying to publicize the miracle, but what are we really trying to do? We're trying to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim Barakim. That's what we're trying to do. The conceptual schema that underlies Pursumei Nisa is we're trying to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name great in the world. That's what we're trying to do. Okay? Now, I didn't hear that from the Rav or read it from the Rav, but I believe it would be congruent with much of Rav Soloveitchik's ideas. Okay? So that's an introduction to Pursumei Nisa and where Megillah actually fits in. Are there any questions before we go on to the next section?
Wouldn't Sukkot also be Pursumei Nisa because you're doing it outside and people see that being out of the Sukkot?
It's an interesting question. I've never ever seen Sukkot described in the category of Pursumei Nisa. But
you
now
say that, so Miriam, mm-hmm, you know, ties that in also.
Well, you could say this de jure, right? By law, it's not perceived by Chazal as being in the category of Pursumei Nisa. However, de facto, it may well serve such a function. Okay? That's one idea. On the other hand, there is a very strong support for you that comes from the Bach. So the Bach, one of the commentators on the tour, says this. He says, he goes to the following extent. He says, if you do not explicitly have in mind at the moment of having Kiddush and eating your bread in the sukkah, that this is all because of besukkah, you know, teshvu avotenu b'mitzrayim, okay, and that a kodesh baruch hu l'man yedu l'dor atechem, I keep the sukkah, I think it's teshvu, right, avotenu b'mitzrayim, that the whole reason is you need to know. So if there's the consciousness of knowing, so knowing is very connected to the idea of Pursumei Nisa. So there may well be a connection that needs further exploration. A good question, as always. Okay, next. When we think of Purim, we of course think of Esther. Mm-hmm. And when we think of Purim and Esther, and we think of the Megillah, we immediately realize, we've all heard this since we were little kids, that you cannot find the Kodesh Baruch Hu's name in the entire Megillah. Okay? And we've all heard that sort of HaMelech is the stand-in. So if you've ever seen a properly written Megillah, you'll see HaMelech is always written in such a way that it stands out. So HaMelech is sort of a nom de plume, if you will. It's a kinui shame. It's a secondary kind of way of referencing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? But nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name per se is absent from the entire Megillah. Alright? And the reason is, Chazal say, that we're involved from the time period of the Megillah on, somewhere, by the way, approximately 500 years or so before the year zero. We don't know the exact time. Okay? For a variety of reasons. But somewhere at that point is the cessation of prophecy, okay? Malachi being the last of all the prophets, okay? And somewhere at that point, we have cessation of prophecy. And as we're going to see momentarily, the Rav calls it the rise of the non-prophetic community. Okay, we go from being the prophetic community with the, in both instances, really, with Chumash and with Nevi'im, to being the non-prophetic community. Hashem hides himself, which leads us to the first page, which looks like this. We have the following pasuk in Devarim Lamed Aleph, Yud Chet. It says, Anochi, and the speaker here, right, the famous question that you always are asked in elementary school, Mi HaMidaber? So the Midaber is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The speaker is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Va'anochi haster astir panai, and I will hide my face, hester panim. Ba'yomahu ana day. Why? Al kol hara'ah, as a result of all the evil asher asah that was done. Well, what is the exemplar on the negative side of evil in the Chumash of Arizora? Okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has patience for just about everything else. But of Avodah Zorah, no. And that's what it says here at the end of the Pasuk. Kifana el Elohim acherim. Because you, the Jewish people, have turned to other gods. Okay? And as a result, you have the idea of Hester Panim. Now look at the word Hester, okay? And think of the heroine of the Megillah. Hester, Esther, not that far away, which is why below that you have the Gemara. Right? Mesechet Chulin Daf Kuf Lameter Amud Bet. And the Gemara asks, Esther min HaTorah minayin. Where can you get a remes, a hint for Esther from the Torah itself? Dichtiv, as the text says, and we started with the text, Vanochi hastir astir panai bayomahu. Okay, so the idea of the Megillah is Hester Panim. Now, if you, in your case, if you turn over the page, we come to a statement from Rav Soloveitchik from the work. It's a posthumous work, but it's based on his public lectures called Days of Deliverance, Essays on Purim and Chanukah. Okay, it should say essays. There's a mistake there on my part. Okay, now, the Rav asks, where's the allusion to Esther in the Pentateuch, which, of course, we just did. All right, now, skip down to, you can see where I drew a line. Skip down three lines to what says, what did the Talmud mean to express by this question and answer? So what the Rav is doing is asking, okay, why were Chazal worried about this? What was the reason? What's the, he's not looking for a simplistic answer, but why did this capture Chazal's attention? Because after all, if you wanted to be a little bit difficult, you could always say Hastir and Astir is not Esther. Because after all, Esther is not even Hebrew. Esther is Persian. Okay, the actual name Esther is Persian, even though we, you know, use it so often. Okay? So Hastir Astir, okay, what's going on? So here's what the Rav says. So the Pentateuch, which really, it's Greek for the Chumash. The Pentateuch tells us the story of the prophetic community at the hour of triumph, at the hour of unusual revelation and direct contact with God. So that's what Chamisha Chumashi Torah is all about. Okay? There's real causality. Okay? For example, if you go to the second paragraph of the Shema, V'haya im Shemoa. If you do X, Y will take place on the positive side. However, if you fail to do that, or worse, of course, v'lo taturu, acharei levavchem, acharei neichem, if you get involved with other gods, well, it's really not going to go all that well. Okay, but there's a sense of immediacy. Okay, everyone in Klal Yisrael could see the cloud over the Ohel Moed. When it lifted, they would go. So direct involvement with Kodesh Brich Hu. And when Moshe spoke, what did Chazal say? Shechina medaberet migrono. The Shechina was speaking from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what the Rav is talking about. It was a prophetic community. And now the Rav is going to ask three important questions. And I hope you keep the booklet, because these questions are going to be answered throughout our study, which is going to go on for a significant period of time. So the Rav then asks, but what kind of message does the Pentateuch have for the non-prophetic community at an hour of distress? And how many hours of distress have there been in the history of our people? Okay, I don't think that they could be counted. I don't think they could be counted. So the question is, you would really call this a seismic shift. We go from a palpable presence of the Shekhinah, where everyone can feel the Shekhinah's presence, right? As we've said many times when we talked about Az Yashir, right? Even the Shifcha Ahayam would be able to say Zeke Livan Vehu, okay? Not even the least sophisticated individual, okay? We went from that to V'anochi Haster Aster Panai. So the Rav asked question number one, what's the relationship between the Torah, and by that also the Nevi'im, because there's still prophecy, to the non-prophetic community at its hour of distress? Okay, that's number one. Number two, where, says the Rav, where is there in the Torah an allusion to the silent, mute confrontation between mighty historical events and the Jew in the diaspora? Okay, that's a question in itself. Between a wicked, cruel monster and a lonely Jewish maiden on whose frail shoulders Providence placed the heavy load of historical responsibility. Here, the Rav doesn't say it in this paragraph. Let me share with you what the Rav said in the public shiur from where this was redacted of sorts. The Rav called the story of Purim and the Megillah itself the story of a conspiracy of silence. This is not my terminology. I wish it could have been, but it's not mine. Now, arguably the case, those of us who were born, not everyone, but those of us who were born literally in the shadow of the Shoah, okay, who have relatives who were niftar in the Shoah, or we know people who lived through the Shoah and so forth, I think all of us would agree that the Shoah took place because of conspiracy of silence. And that's what the Rav himself said. He said that the Megillah and Purim were just as much a conspiracy of silence as the Shoah itself. The only difference, said Rav Soloveitchik, is that Haman was stopped and Hitler, Yimach Shemo, was not. But the conditions were very much the same. Okay? And let me just mention one of them that would make a great deal of sense, I think, to all of us. One of the things, the themes that comes across in the Megillah are endless amounts of drinking parties. Okay? Remember, the first drinking party that takes place goes for how long? Anyone remember? 180 days. Okay? If you thought around the world in 80 days was a long time, 180 days of feasting. I think it's fair to say that shows hedonism at its worst.
Didn't they use the vessels of the Beis
HaMikdash? Oh, yeah.
Just to add insult to...
Oh, yes, they did. Okay, but that was in the second sutta. The second sutta took place for a mere 7 days. Okay? But if the first one was hedonistic, the second one was even more so. Because it was in the second one, not the first one, who was invited to come and sing happy birthday? Vashti. Okay, that's the best way I can say it in mixed audience. Okay? Vashti. She wasn't invited in the first. Why wasn't she invited in the first? Because in the first, you had aristocrats. And you had, the sophisticates. And what was Ahasuerus trying to do? He was trying to win them over. It wouldn't have looked very good if he would have invited Vashti to come in her crown. Because after all, Vashti was a true what? Princess. And Ahasuerus, according to Chazal, had been a stable boy, okay, who just sort of moved up the ranks, probably not too gently. Okay, that's Purim. Go to the Shoah, okay? What do you have following the end of World War I? You have the Weimar Republic, right, during the 20s, between the two wars. The Weimar Republic was one of the most hedonistic periods in all of human history. Okay? It was the excess of pleasure-seeking that set up, according to many historians, not just from a theological perspective, but it was that excess, that absolute excess of anything goes and just have fun and happy days are here again, etc., etc., etc. Okay, it was all of that excess that allowed the conditions to coalesce so that Hitler, Yimach Shemo, could rise. Interesting enough. All of this is from the Rav. And last but not least, this is very important. Many of you have heard of the Wannsee Conference. Mm-hmm. That was the planning of the final solution. Okay? It was in a beautiful villa in Wannsee that, of course, had been stolen from a Jewish family. Okay? Number one. And they stayed up all night planning. This is all the major players. I don't even want to honor them by mentioning their names. 10 of the 12 of them that were there had PhDs, and remember what a German PhD meant. Okay, we're talking about people, you know, who wasn't in those days Papa has dough. It was major. So they work all night planning our destruction. Right? The Entlösung die Judenfrage, the answer, okay, to the Jewish question. All night long they plan. What do they do when they're done?
Drink.
They have beer and sausage, and they get completely inebriated. Does that sound anything like what we said before? Mm-hmm. So that's the condition. That's what's going on. So the wicked, cruel monster is an excellent description of Hitler, Yimach Shemo, as well as it is as Haman. That's question number two. And what I just shared with you, by the way, the similarities, comes from Rav Soloveitchik. I don't want to claim it as my own. Number three, and the biggest question of all, how can the Jew triumph over his adversaries and enemies if God has stopped speaking to him? If the cryptic messages he receives remain unintelligible and incomprehensible? That's what silence is. How do you interpret it? What does it mean? It's a lack of communication, which arguably in the case of Purim with Anochi Aster Asteret Panai becomes a communication in itself. Paradox. Ultimate paradox. So the Rav continues and he says this. The answer to this question is more a statement of facts than an explanation. In other words, we don't really have an answer per se. We're going to discover it together as we go on. Even during the non-prophetic era, at a time when the divine countenance is hidden, Shekhinah is not there, man is elected by God to carry on, to make decisions, to undertake difficult tasks courageously and implement them superbly. Okay? Now, it's a superhuman task for a young, inexperienced maiden. Because after all, Esther was just a relatively simple young woman. The destiny, obviously, Kutcher Brichu himself chose. So how did she do it?
Answers. Do we know how old she was?
Excuse?
Do we know how old she was?
Well, she was young enough that she had youthful beauty. Mm-hmm. And don't ask me to go further. Okay?
She wasn't married, right?
She was not.
Very pretty young.
Correct. Correct. So, you ready? However, the Spirit of God, what would you and I call the Spirit of God in Hebrew? Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, will descend on her and inspire her to defy danger and to make the right decisions. Now, this is something, this next line is something that should be up, I believe as an educator of 40 years, should be up in every school, high school, and yeshiva in the entire world, for men as well as for women. God asks of man slash woman to reach maturity and independence. What a powerful line. Esther didn't have the background and the training, but she learned on the job. And she realized if it wasn't for her, literally, all would be lost. But she realized, what did she say? Imavadati? Avadati. If I'm gone, I'm gone. But at least I know that, to use a line from every Western that was ever shot, we'll go out fighting. We'll go out with blazing guns. At least I'll do what I can do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will guide me in what I do. And that's what it is. God asks of man slash woman to reach maturity and independence. One of the reasons I'm stressing the woman piece is that in this Sefer, where this piece is taken from, Rav Soloveitchik actually says he believes that women have a higher existential status than men. He says it explicitly. It's not something I'm making nice about. He says it explicitly. If that's the case, think about the Imaot, think about Chana, think about Esther, think about Yehudit, think about Tamar, and so forth, and understand that's why we're here today, because God asks of woman to reach maturity and independence. Okay? This is the idea, and at the end of it, the Rav says, all communities, prophetic and non-prophetic, will join in. In other words, it's true. The Shekhinah is no longer speaking to us directly, but that doesn't mean that the Torah somehow, in a sense of elision, right, like in a language idea, doesn't mean that the Torah and the Nevi'im do not come into Ketuvim, they do not come into Megillat Esther, because ultimately the two communities, the prophetic and the non-prophetic, join together. Okay? That's an idea of Anachi Hastir, Astir Epanai, and the idea of the, how to understand Hester Panim. So Hester, so the takeaway, because it's very important to have a takeaway, because Hester Panim sounds like an Edgar Allan Poe piece of theology. So I want to just explain one last time as a takeaway. Hester Panim does not mean that we give up hope. Hester Panim does not mean all is lost. Hester Panim means we need to call upon our inner resources, each and every one of us, just like Esther did, and just like everyone who's lived since that time, and say, you know, Michamocha be'kelim Hashem, who's like you among all the strong ones, be'elim Hashem, okay, who's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Zekelim Anvehu, I'm joining HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his grand crusade, okay, to make the world a better place, even during the period of Hester Panim, we have to rise to the occasion. Okay, next idea. The eternality of Megillat Esther. Okay, let's take a look at the Pasuk. This is the idea of Kol Gadol V'lo Yasaf. that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke with a great voice that never ceased. So, for example, in a very real sense, that voice that was at Har Sinai is still speaking today. Every time we do a mitzvah, every time we think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and every time we say to ourselves, is what I want to do congruent with what the Torah and with HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do? Every time we raise those questions and we pursue the proper behaviors, then we're seeing that it's a great voice that never ceases. So the pasuk says, "Et ha-divarim ha-eila diber ha-Hashem el kol kahalchem." These words, Kadosh Baruch Hu spoke to your entire community, Bahar, right on Har Sinai, mitoch ha-esh, from the midst of the flame, he'anan, and the cloud, the he'ar fell, and the darkness that one could not see through. It was a kol gadol v'lo yasaf. It was a great voice that never ceased. So let's go right to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Okay? Now, we have two speakers in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The first is Rabbi Yochanan, and the second is Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, known affectionately by Jews as Reish Lakish. All right? We've all Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Okay? So, you ready? This is one of the more amazing Gemarot that you'll find in your entire life. So focus, it's really beautiful. And if anyone had any desire to review it, I also gave a translation here for you. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Hanevi'im v'haketuvim," both the prophets and the writings, "atidin livatel," will in the future be nullified. You won't know of them anymore. Why now not? The future being...
Why not? Sorry.
Okay?
I always read the end of the book first.
Gotcha. Okay? And they lived happily ever after. Okay. Now, okay, ready? V'chamishat sifrei Torah, chamishat sifrei Torah, and the five books of the Torah, einan atin levatel. They'll never stop. In other words, the Torah will always be with us. Okay? Mata ama. Okay? Which basically means, what is the reason? 21st century kid talk. No, what's going on? Answer, kol gadol v'lo yasaf. Because it's a voice that never ceased. Comes along Reish Lakish, and he says something else. No, it's not what's going to happen. He doesn't disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, that there will be Chumshei Torah. But he says, no. Af Megillat Esther v'halachot. So too will Megillat Esther ever exist and ever be part and parcel of what we do as Jews. V'halachot. What are the halachot? Torah Shabbat Peh. Einan atinu livatel. Okay, how do you know that's true? Ne'emar kan, because it says here in Sefer Devarim, in the pasuk we saw, kol gadol v'lo yasaf. It's a great voice that never will cease. V'ne'emar lahalan, and it says in Megillat Esther, v'zichram lo yasuf. See the different the relationship between yasaf in the Torah and yasuf in Megillat Esther? That it's memory will never cease, Mizaram, the memory of the days of Purim. How do you ensure that the memory of the days of Purim will never be lost, will never be forgotten? Reading Megillat Esther. Okay? What about halachot? Oh, we have a pasuk from Habakkuk. What does it say there? Halichot olam lo. That halichot, which sounds very much like what word? Halachot, olam, which sounds very much like li'olam, va'ed. So what we see here, says Reish Lakish, is that the Megillah and Torah Shabbat Peh and the Torah will be forever. Okay, now, I know what some of you are thinking. Very nice, Rabbi. It's a lovely piece of Agadah. It couldn't possibly have halachic standing. Turn over the page.
Well, I felt like we wouldn't fast once Mashiach comes. Like, we wouldn't do Talis Esther.
That's a different conversation. I don't want to get thrown off the track. But do hold on to it, and don't feel that it's a put-down. Let's address that another time, though. Fair enough? Okay. Now, I think you'd all agree that the Rambam generally did not write stories. Okay? And as been said, actually I heard this from Rabbi Frankel once at the Aguda. He said, in the world of halacha, there's the Rambam, and there's everybody else. Okay? So, for example, a Havdil. In philosophy, the famous line is, all of philosophy is a footnote to Aristotle. Okay? In terms of Jewish law, even if you disagree with the Rambam, you've got to take his opinion into account. So what the Rambam's going to say now is, really, to quote Herzl, Ein zu agada. This is not just a dream. This is not a story. Look what he says. And he sounds like Reish Lakish. I'm giving you the punchline. That's for you. Call Sifrei HaNevi'im, all the works of the Nevi'im, V'chol HaKetuvim, and all the writings. Okay? Atidim Levatel, Liyamot HaMashiach. Ultimately are going to be nullified in the time of the Mashiach. Chutz M'Megillat Esther. Except for Megillat Esther. Hare hi kayemet k'chamisha chumshe Torah. It will remain just as a chamisha chumshe Torah will remain. U'kahalachot shel Torah shel Baal Peh. And just like the laws from Chazal. She'enan b'teilin li'olam. And again, remember, it's the Rambam. It's the Rambam who had the intellectual honesty and really the guts to take that statement from Reish Lakish and say, this is halacha. This is halacha. V'afapi shekol zichron tzarot yivatel. And we know already, thank God, that one day with Mashiach, Sekenu sheyavo aleinu b'mirav yameinu, things will be so good that we're going to forget all the times of misery, right? Nishkachu atzarot arishonot, as it says in Yeshayahu, v'chi nistaru me'enayin, they'll be gone from my eyes, a pasuk from Yeshayahu, yimei hapurim lo yivatlu, the days of Purim will never be forgotten. The whole story, Hester Panim included, will never be forgotten. Because what does it say in Megillat Esther? Just we said a moment ago, V'in me'a Purim ha'ela lo ya'avru mitoch ha'yehudim. And the days of Purim will never, never go away from the Jews. Why? V'zichram lo ya'suf nezaram. And in their memory will continue ad infinitum. Now, there are two basic approaches, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to go into it. First is the Ra'avad, the Ravid. Now, the Rambam lived in 1135 to 1204. The Ravid lives 1125 to 1198, so the Ravid lives at the same time as the Rambam. And for the Rambam was not the Rambam. He didn't sit there and go, oh, it's the Rambam. No. He was hyper, hyper critical, and he had a very vitriolic pen. Look what he says. He says, Ama Avram, that's the Aleph Aleph. Ama Avram, Devar Hediutut Hu Zeh. This is sheer unmitigated idiocy.
Whoa.
Does the Rambam know he's writing this?
No.
No, I mean, he never saw this?
I don't think he ever saw it. Okay? And I guess it's probably pretty good there because. Right? No, there was no tweets in those days. Okay, but now listen, if I would have said this, you would have, oh, Rabbi, come on, you know, you're exaggerating. This is what the Ravid said. And then he goes on to say that what that means is that, well, what Reish Lakish really meant and what Rabbi Yochanan meant is that they won't be read publicly, but God forbid you should ever say. Okay, dot, dot, dot. Now, the Korban Eda was Rav David Frankel, lived in 1704 to 1762, took the Rambam literally. He said, no, if you saw the Talmud Yerushalmi and you saw the Rambam, this is it. This is the truth. Okay? That's what's going to happen. There won't be Ketuvim, except for Megillah. We're stopping reading the involvement at all with Nevi'im. That's over. In Yemot HaMashiach. Okay? So, I didn't finish everything, but I'm not surprised. What I do want to do with you next week, we're going to start this year by talking about what I think, and this is my own view, you don't have to like it if you don't, you know, that's fine. But I'm going to talk about three ideas about why Purim is so uniquely placed within the Jewish conscience, and what it really means to us, Le'olam Va'ed. Three ideas that are very accessible. Then we're going to go actually into not only the first two words of the Megillah, we're actually going to read the Megillah together. So if you can, next week, please do bring a copy. Thank you one and all for coming. You're an amazing group to especially come out in the rain. Thank you.
Bye-bye.